Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insight in the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbal. Hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Hope everybody that enjoyed Vegas at MJ BizCon and MJ Unpacked and all the cannabis conferences and good times that were had, and if people saw on Twitter, some not good times. But overall, I've been hearing a lot of good things. I myself was unable to get there this year, but I am happy to see the industry growing and thriving in many cases. And to that end, I'm very happy to be bringing you today's episode with Waseem Bahous and Alana Goldberg. Waseem is the co-founder and COO of The Kenigma. Alana is the CEO, and The Kenigma is a cannabis publication online from a science-backed perspective. They're a startup out of Israel, and they talk about taking a global, multi-language approach to edifying people about the industry and the plant and the effects that legalization may have. With this episode and next week, I'm talking to Max Simon from Green Flower. It ushers in a new era that I think we are looking for. And I think these conversations point to where the industry is going and where people's understanding of the industry and the plant is going. So kudos to everyone furthering that insight and education and information, and hope you enjoy today's episode. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. I'm Long Trulieve, Chiron, Isracan Biosciences, the parent company Air Wellness, and the ETF MSOS. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Waseem and Alana, welcome to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Really happy to have you both on the show. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's my pleasure to have you. As we were talking before I hit record, kind of just telling you both how inspired I am by what you're doing with Kenigma and what you're trying to bring, not just to the cannabis industry, but dare I say to society. So if you both want to share your story about how you got to Kenigma, how you came to found it. I'd love to hear from both of you how you got here.
Sure, definitely. Well, I can start. Waseem hired me, actually. Both of us were, in a way, part of the founding team. The company has, in the past couple of years, gone through a few changes. So I'll kind of start from how we met, and we can take it from there. So when I joined, and maybe Waseem will do a little bit of the before story after that. When I joined the company, we were in the initial stages of starting to talk about what the Kenigma was going to be. The rest of the team had an idea, a group of people coming from a mixed background in the digital content space and digital publishing space and the cannabis space. And basically the idea came up that there was this gap of quality information when it came to cannabis, and that this was going to be really useful as, you know, country after country, state after state started legalizing, and people started, you know, being open to all of the, you know, plethora of different uses for cannabis. So the team, this is, you know, my understanding, got to the point where they were like, okay, we need someone who knows content. And they started looking and eventually found me. And that's my background. My background is in journalism, specifically digital journalism. I ran the website of the Jerusalem Post for a number of years. After that, I went on to work in the nonprofit space, again, in digital publishing, and then dabbled in performance marketing for a few years as well, just to kind of round it out. And so when we met, I thought this was a fantastic idea, kind of from all of the angles, from the angle of being a really interesting story. Cannabis is just, this is what I do. I'm a storyteller, and it's just such an interesting story that, like, you know, the same thing that I was smoking behind the scout hall opposite my high school back in Australia, you know, wow, a couple of decades ago, is a plant which can, you know, make people's lives so much better, suffering from all different conditions. There's just so much to drill into. So I was fascinated and I was up for a next challenge. And so I joined, and I guess, that's the inception story from my point of view. What about you, Waseem?
Yeah, absolutely. That was actually very well told, Ilana. So I think a few months prior to Ilana joining, you know, the vision behind founding the company was a combination, as Ilana said, of people that came from the digital space. I came more from the ad technologies and the digital marketing space, combined with some people with a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, hands-on, specifically in the Israeli cannabis market, but also some other markets abroad. And I think there was this saying at the beginning all the time that beyond the fact that we want to obviously make cannabis accessible to everybody, cannabis information accessible at least, and you know, to fight the stigma and kind of change things around how people are perceiving cannabis. There's something about it in terms of karma. Like I mean, for me, I came from the ad tech space, you know, starting a company and managing a company for several years and growing it, and you know, I think I got to a point where what I'm doing is just getting people to click on ads and I'm making money from it, which is really cool. And it was a lot of fun and a lot of challenges. But at the same time, you know, there was something about cannabis that to me seemed like the right thing to do for the world, you know, some sort of a clear mission of you're actually making an impact, not just making a good living and gaining experience in the startups world and you know, making your mark. So that appealed to me obviously a lot. And we were lucky to have backers that were willing to invest and to go on this adventure. And as Ilana mentioned, you know, things changed a lot of times going in, which is completely natural for any new venture, I would say. But we do feel that it all the time just changed for the better. And in the last, I think, year and 2 months, Ilana have taken the helm as CEO. And she's been doing a fantastic job developing both the brand of Kenigma and obviously the production of content and the distribution. And we've been growing exponentially within this year. So yeah, it's been a great ride so far.
So Wasim, tell me, because, you know, as you said, there's so many different iterations to creating something and you start thinking that you're going to go in this one lane and then maybe kind of veer. And everybody, I started this podcast over 2 years ago, and things that people have been saying since the beginning was how you have to be nimble in the industry, how you have to be able to pivot. Things are changing all the time. Regulations, you know, what you're focusing on, and also because of the number of startups and what you're bringing to like a burgeoning industry that obviously needs to change as it grows and develops. So talk to us a little bit about like where you started from, what you were thinking you were going to bring, how it kind of pivoted, even if it's a slow pivot, yeah, to where you are now and how those kind of changes came about.
So for me going in, I was really thinking of, wow, the cannabis market online is an untapped market and it has a lot of money, a lot of potential in terms of generating money, ad money mainly. Like, you know, you have these advertisers who want to reach consumers and they don't have anywhere to go to, you know, with cannabis being a Schedule I drug and most of the American, you know, advertising related companies, whether it's Google and Facebook, you know, it's a huge taboo and you can't really do anything there with cannabis. So to me, what I was really thinking is, sure, it would be great to create, you know, valuable information, but I think there's a lot of business potential in this. So I think my initial kind of perception was that we will be able to generate, we will be able to create this another successful Israeli ad tech company, but with this, you know, kind of focus on cannabis, I think. But at the same time, I've been working with publishers for several years now, and I really wanted to switch sides. I wanted, you know, to be involved in actually building a publisher. And I think what we tried to do at the beginning is to do both things, you know, to do this this publisher, this you know, unbiased, a trustworthy very professional in terms of the content that is being produced and distributed, but at the same time, to try to tackle and attack this, this business opportunity. And I think the more time actually passed, it got more clear to me that it's not really about the building some sort of an advertising ecosystem. It's really more about that this, that the market actually is way more nascent and at stages that it's not even ripe still to develop such products. It's within much earlier stages, and the stages are actually to be able to develop high quality content and opportunities for users to engage and really learn about cannabis, and you know, to start developing this affinity to a brand that is actually providing me this knowledge and making me driving me to make better decisions. And I think we completed this pivot about a year and 2 months ago, which we said, okay, this is the right thing to do. That's what we need to focus on. And I have to say, it was absolutely the right choice and the right decision.
I think also I'll add to that. Sorry, it's just if I can.
No. Yeah,
but it was add kind to of, it. Yeah, it was kind of like we started with the Conigma, and then we thought of all of these different ideas, and we tried a bunch of different things, and I think we learned a lot from different ideas. For example, a cannabis job search site and different like cannabis comparison sites and CBD sites and review websites. And what we did was we kind of like, oh, I'm making hand gestures, but that's no good for people who are listening. It was like we started with the Conigma, we added a whole lot more, and then we ended up back at the Conigma. That when it came time to decide, like, what are we doubling down on? And ultimately, that's what we were doing kind of a few months into the pandemic last year, was like, okay, where are we putting our money down here? And we decided that it was, you know, we were going back to what we came to do, or continuing on and putting all of our efforts into what we came to do, which was the Conigma.
And talk to me about your, you know, I would call it like a global perspective. You have it in a number of different languages. You're in English for the most, I mean, I would guess that most people are reading the site in English, but you guys are based in Israel. Talk to us about that kind of global approach and how you set on, you know, multi-language and that kind of approach.
Yeah, definitely. So your assumption is correct. The majority of our readership is coming in on the English site. About 70% of our readers come from North America, so it makes sense. But we do have a German site, a Spanish site, and a Portuguese site targeting the Brazilian market. And they were all strategic decisions to make those, as we saw kind of regulatory changes paving way for the potential, you know, for this content to be really valuable. Because the thing is, the majority of our content is really mainly useful to people who are living in legal states, so have legal access to the plant. Because if you're buying on the illicit market, then you're not going to be getting a label on the back of the cannabis that you buy, obviously. So you might be able to learn from us why cannabis makes your eyes red, but we're probably not going to be able to help you find the right type of cannabis to, you know, treat your father who has Parkinson's, for example. So that's why the locations are specifically important here, given the cannabis market. Now, in terms of the advantage that we have sitting in Israel is that a lot of the leading research, as you probably know, in the cannabis space, it's certainly in years gone by and even today is coming from here in Israel. So we have access and really great relationships with research institutions and individuals here in Israel. And what that means is it makes it kind of that much easier for us to take the scientific information and translate it into you know, normal plain English or German or Spanish or Portuguese. And that's kind of, you know, something really unique about our approach, that it's not just that we're in the North American market, looking at the North American market from the North American market. We've got that kind of more zoomed out approach. Things are changing though, and there's research. There have been some changes recently this year in the types of cannabis that American researchers are allowed to use. Up until now, they were actually only allowed to use three different types of cannabis that were all grown by the US government. So the takeaways that that they could derive from their research were really limited. But that's expanding, which means that the kind of the input from researchers around the world is really expanding as well. So, you know, as the world opens up, we're going to be traveling a lot to speak with them as well.
So like as Israel goes online, I mean, if you guys have thoughts about that, I'm happy to hear. Do you open that up to an Hebrew and Arabic language on the website? Is that where you're thinking?
Yeah, we're considering it, definitely. We also really love the idea of, you know, having Hebrew and Arabic being just like, you know, our home languages. Yeah. But it's really looking at the strategic potential, at the size of the audience, at the competition, understanding what other publishers are in the space. It's I would say in both of those languages, it's quite a blue ocean at this point. So it's a matter of like anything else, sizing up what the investment is there and understanding what the potential is. It'll come, definitely, both of those languages.
Talking about like the development and going online and seeing where the market is, you know, as I said, like starting this podcast a couple of years ago and like talking about the need for education and the need for destigmatization, which is still completely true, but there's more entrants like coming into the space. Like you talked about, like a career site, you know, there's one or two, I would say, you know, education, there's sites that do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. How are you guys looking to stand out? Aside from the ways that you just mentioned in terms of like the global approach, how are you guys looking to stand out, or what are you looking to do to kind of like further your presence and gain more market share in that regard?
Yeah, so we really look at the Kenigma as you, the one-stop shop. It's the go-to place for any cannabis inquiry. So, you know, I mentioned before a few of the use cases, you know, whether people are looking for to use cannabis for to treat their parents or their children. That's kind of like one angle, but a big part of, you know, the market at this point is just mainstream, like the same as, you know, people that use cannabis, that people that have a glass of wine on the weekend, that, you know, consume cannabis on the weekend, for example, or as part of their health and wellness routine. So there's kind of all of these different touch points. And what we're looking to do is provide the information that people need in the format that works for them. So one of the things that I've learned a lot in my career working in digital content is just that people consume content in different ways. You know, some people like watching, some people like reading. To me, it's always an article. Some people need to see it visually to properly digest the information. So our first step was making sure that whatever topic we're covering, and there are many and we're not done yet, we cover as many of those platforms as possible. So that's the kind of first layer, the way I see it, in developing the content. And then the next step that we're just kind of getting our teeth sunk into now is interactive tools. So, you know, you've got people who want to read the article or watch the video, and some people just want to click a few buttons or answer a question and then get on with their lives. They don't want to nerd out over all the information that, you know, we might find very interesting, but we're not here to shove information down people's throats. We're here to answer their questions and help people, as Wasim said before, make better decisions when it comes to their cannabis journey. So these interactive tools are based on scientific algorithms. So we've kind of condensed the content and what we know from the research in order to create, we've condensed what we know from the research in order to create the content. And now we're looking at condensing it even further into these tools. So one example that we just launched is a how to consume cannabis tool. So let's say you're new to cannabis and all you think of is like people smoking bongs and you don't want to smoke bongs. So what are the different ways you can consume cannabis? So it's a three question quiz. And then you get an answer at the end. You know, you could try vaping or you could try sublingual absorption. And so that kind of obviously on the user side, this is a way that we can answer questions quicker. And that's the aim of the game, you know, it's just setting people off on their way. But from a kind of business perspective, this opens up a whole lot of different avenues that we can have product recommendations in there. We can have work on different partnerships with services. We can work with dispensaries. So that's kind of the next level and turning it into being, you know, not just a publisher, even though we love publishers, but like what we like to call a publisher plus.
Something that I really like about what you're doing with Kenigma is I'm a big fan, obviously, of what I said, you know, destigmatizing the plant, furthering education, furthering normalization of what's happening. So it's not something you have to do behind your high school, you know, like, but also you are bringing a multicultural approach. I don't know if that's deliberate or if that's a happy accident. Wasim, like in starting Kenigma, was that something that you envisioned? Was that something that was important to you? How do you think about that as starting a company?
I think it's obviously being, you know, as a part of a minority in Israel, obviously You know, I would lie that if I would say that that's not something that comes to mind when you're being involved in any venture or any company, okay? Because, you know, I think that, you know, we think about all the time that, you know, there's a lot of capable people, but really it's about who are the people who get the opportunity. So, you know, me being able to develop a career and to be involved in, you know, starting companies, so that's always in the back of my mind. But I have to say that I think the multicultural part is something that was really triggered once actually Ilana joined. I will never forget, you know, she told me the sentence that, you know, you can't write English content from by somebody that is that English is not his native language. And I think that was really, you know, the beginning and the start of building the content team. So, you know, all of a sudden we have these, obviously Ilana with the Australian origins, and then we have people obviously from the States living in Israel, and then from the UK. And I think at one point when we actually made the change and you know, me and Ilana, we started, you know, completely making all the decisions moving forward. I think it was very important for us to think about diversity and to try to develop a team that has different cultural background. So, you know, I think right now we have a team with US, not US based, but originally from the US, Australia, Ilana, UK, we have Norway, we have India as well. And, you know, we want to keep growing this because, you know, I think if anything, we really understand that there's a lot of leverage in combining these different cultures. And I think the pandemic definitely taught us how to work remotely and how to incorporate different people from different backgrounds and different time zones within our work routine. So I think that's something that we are definitely very, very proud of. And that's something definitely that we're always extremely aware about, I would say.
I think it's really
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's really important in the cannabis space specifically as well. You know, this diversity and race piece is very alive, you know, in the United States for sure, but across the world. And I think in the cannabis space, just given how minorities were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. I think it's really important here that we do have a well-rounded approach, and it's not just the kind of dominant culture approach and the, like, you know, mainstream consumers. That there's a real legacy in this industry of minorities and of minority discrimination as well. And so I think part of rolling back the stigma around the plant is also kind of rectifying sometimes it comes down to like dozens of years in jail that shouldn't have been spent. It's a real serious issue here, and so I think that comes down to the values of the industry as well as the values of the company.
Absolutely. Wasim, when you were starting this, did you meet with a lot of resistance? I mean, both maybe personally / culturally, but also like you're coming from a quote unquote respectable, you know, profession before this, like changing gears, was that met with resistance?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, actually, you know, on a personal level, you know, cannabis has never been something strange to me. I think like, for anybody within my surrounding, I think it wasn't really a surprise. Me deciding to pursue that direction in general. I think, you know, my parents are elderly, I would say. And, you know, when I just told them that I'm going to be involved in this venture and it's about cannabis, and no, I'm not going to be selling drugs in any way. It's really about, you know, both digital marketing and content and distribution and education. You know, that's, you know, both my parents were in one way or another teachers. My mother was a teacher for 40 years. My father was a pharmacist and a teacher. And, you know, I think it was very clear that we've been always very socially active. And, you know, to me, beyond obviously the business opportunity, I think it was clear that it's something that is worth pursuing. So, I think the most interesting conversations that I've ever had to do is with, you know, some of my surroundings that weren't too familiar with cannabis. And I think, as Ilana mentioned, we're both really good at talking. So, you know, I think we're good at captivating audiences. So anybody who wanted to listen, I was really happy to you know, kind of expose cannabis for its true nature and you know, to explain, you know, the history, also how the history impacted how we view and perceive cannabis. So I think these conversations were definitely very fun, definitely in the first year, but still are, you know, and I think what has been also good here in Israel that, you know, more people and more doctors are kind of pushing more towards treatment with cannabis. So all of a sudden, you know, my next door neighbor has a pharmacy and he's a licensed distributor of medical cannabis. I think I have within the scope of my two blocks, I have three different people with different medical conditions that actually consume cannabis. So, you know, obviously there's a general change happening. So being able to, I would say, be an ambassador or being some sort of a, I would even say, a PR agent for cannabis, it's a great fun and you know, great honor to do.
And getting back to what you both were talking about in terms of COVID kind of accelerating or engendering change in some way, I know everyone that got hit by the pandemic had some moment of like, you know, what the hell am I going to do or what the hell is about to happen? But then I think in a lot of instances, it was actually like a big benefit in some ways. How did you guys look at that and how have you thought about that since?
Yeah, so I guess there's kind of two answers here. One is looking at the cannabis industry and one is looking at the company. So the cannabis industry, I think we can all agree, kind of won the pandemic. like, you know, to even imagine a year and a half ago that cannabis would be seen as an essential business is just unthinkable. So that was obviously a big win. And it doesn't mean that all cannabis businesses have gone through the roof, as of course, you know, I know I don't need to tell you this, but there was certainly like a bit of a feeling of like, okay, we're in the right industry, at least here. This isn't something that's like now irrelevant now that we're in this era of the pandemic. I think for the Conigma specifically, this was something of a blessing in disguise, that we were really used to coming into the office, having a lot of fun at the office, but also like wasting a lot of time at the office, I think. And that's something about office culture that you only notice when you kind of break it. And we were super nervous, obviously, going into it. And we set up daily meetings, like a beginning of the day meeting and an end of the day meeting. And we, you know, the management team at the time, we were really focused on keeping morale up and making sure that everyone was communicating well, because there was like, I think we're pretty organized, and a lot of the credit goes to Wasim for setting us up on the right team collaboration tools to begin with, you know, pre-pandemic. But we're an Israeli startup. So most of the important work happened when one person interrupted the other person in the middle of their work, grabbed the two of them and went into a meeting that another three people were having, had a brilliant idea, and turn around, you know, and that those sorts of interactions are a lot harder to replicate online. Mm-hmm. So that was what we were really working on, was like, how do we replicate it? How do we make sure that, you know, we can still capture that innovation? Because when it comes to just like keeping things moving with existing systems, yeah, you can do that online. You might even be able to do it better online, and people can, you know, have the added benefit of more time with their families and being able to be a bit more flexible with timing. And that's all well and good, but how do you get the spark? How do you get those like brainstorming sessions? So simple things like encouraging everyone to bug each other, like pick up the phone to each other. And it was very annoying to me because I don't like it when people call me. I like text messages and emails. But that's what we need to do. We needed to kind of replicate that. And I think it worked pretty well. I even make phone calls sometimes, and I didn't want to beforehand. So I think when it comes down to it now, you know, Wasim mentioned the global team that we've got at the moment. It's impossible to make meetings sometimes because we've got someone in every time zone. We've got a team working in India. We've got an editor in Uruguay. We've got our German editor as well. We've got a couple of scientific advisors that sit in the US. And so what we're doing now is kind of just running like a 24/7 newsroom, and everything's happening online. And I think it's fantastic. And I really like the the work-life balance benefit that we get from this. Like, I sometimes go and lift weights in the middle of the day, and that's totally fine because that's the best time for me to do it. And there, you know, plenty of different members of the team that are splitting different shifts with their partners to take care of the kids, because the kids are, you know, 1 week in school, 1 week in isolation, back and forth. And it just works. And when we kind of learn how to deal with that. And so I think it's ultimately a really, like, I don't know, a positive turn in our evolution.
Yeah, I would also add to that. I think one of the most important lessons that we learned in the pandemic, that you have to make uncomfortable decisions all of a sudden, you know, stuff that some issues, some problems that maybe, you know, you'd say I would get to it, or I would handle it, or it would sort itself out in one way or another. I think, you know, for us for sure, but, you know, I saw it also in other businesses. You just had to deal with it. You just had to make very uncomfortable decisions. And, you know, for a lot of people, whether it's, you know, you're a founder or you're a leader, or, you know, you're just starting off a new job. You know, for a lot of people, they were just starting off a new job, and all of a sudden they're 2 months at home, not seeing anybody of their new teammates or team members and so on. So I think what it really triggered for a lot of people, and definitely for us, is just, you know, being able to make uncomfortable decisions and understanding that time is always of the essence. There's nothing, you know, you should definitely deal with things in a timely fashion, because you understand that starting from the work environment might actually change, but not just that, you know, God only knows what happens, whether it's financial markets or whatever, you know. People, I think when the pandemic first hit, obviously everybody was, you know, trying to guard their and manage their risks as much as possible, whether it's from a health perspective, financial perspective, and so on. And I think for us, definitely for me and Ilana, I think it was an amazing opportunity to embrace that kind of mentality of making uncomfortable decisions all the time, which makes us a better company, obviously.
And in terms of Israel specifically, do either of you have a personal or professional opinion on how you see it going in terms of legalization? And does that, I mean, I guess it does matter in terms of, you know, you said that you get more active once a jurisdiction's legal. So are you paying a lot of attention to that?
Yeah, we're paying some attention. I think we would even probably consider launching before. Like, it's pretty clear that Israel will legalize, whether it's in 6 months' time or in a year or in 5 years' time. It'll happen. So, like, we could act as soon as we, you know, get the sign, or we could act beforehand and be ahead of it. I wouldn't want to, especially not when we're being recorded, make any predictions of my own. I think that it's going to come down to political negotiations, as it does pretty much everywhere, by the way. I think there are, like, little points that end up kind of becoming sticking points, like whether it's banking or whether it's issues in enforcement, like the issue that we can't test for cannabis intoxication in the same way as we can test blood alcohol levels, for example. These things are, like, held up as sticking points, but really it ends up being, like, such a different combination of factors. Yeah.
And I think the fun part here is that, you know, a lot of cases when you're developing a product, you usually try to go to the most mature markets, test it out, develop it, you know, do different iterations and features. And I think it's to the benefit of the emerging markets. Obviously, Israel is the leading market when it comes to cannabis innovation, but due to its size and its location and obviously its regulation, it's still considered an emerging market in one way or another. And I think the fun part for us is that when we will launch, as Ilana said, I think we will definitely launch. It's just a matter of time. I think the audience will actually have the benefit of a more mature product, an experienced product that have more features. And I would even say that is even more digest, more well digest based on our past experience within the mature market. So I think it actually, you know, it works in everybody's best interest eventually.
And your main way of monetization right now, is that coming from investment dollars? What's the kind of goal there now and I guess going forward?
So our focus at the moment really is developing the audience and developing the product. But we do kind of what we call like implementing the revenue stream. So for example, we do have programmatic ads on the website. And anyone who knows about the kind of CPMs from programmatic knows that with 350,000 users a month, which is what we're drawing to the Kinigma at the moment, we're not making millions coming from programmatic advertising. However, we're constantly optimizing it so that when that 350,000 a month turns into a million, which is what we're heading for around the middle of next year on our current growth rate, then that's going to be significant. So that's just one example. The majority of our revenues, just like any publisher, are going to come from advertising and sponsorships. And we do also have some affiliations. So our credibility is of utmost importance to us. So we'll never recommend anything that doesn't fit in with the science, fit in with the kind of broader recommendations that we're giving the audience. But if, you know, for example, we're talking about vaporizing as an inhalation method, and we can give a few recommendations of the best vaporizers on the market, and we can put an affiliate link in there and potentially draw some commissions, then you know, that fits pretty fine with our editorial judgment. So those are the main revenue streams that we have at the moment. As I mentioned before, the interactive tools that we're developing open the floodgates of different revenue opportunities there as well. And there's also a lot of partnerships that, as we see the audience growing, there's more and more of these partnerships that become relevant for bigger and bigger companies in the space. And I think really the interesting thing here down the line, you know, you asked about legalization in Israel, but the really interesting point here is going to be legalization in the United States. And when we get to a place where the giants like Facebook and Google open their doors to advertising in the cannabis space, audiences like ours are going to be even more valuable to advertisers that are completely outside of the cannabis space. Like, this audience of cannabis users is an audience that is educated, employed, has expendable income, it travels as pets. Like, there's all sorts of adjacent markets here, which are going to be super interesting once it is a mainstream market across the United States and not just in specific states. So, you know, it could just as well be yoga pants that are advertised on banners on the site as much as, you know, bongs or rolling papers or CBD products.
What would you say each of you has learned, kind of not just from Kinigma, but from your past into now? What would you say is like your biggest takeaway or your biggest lesson learned about like producing digital content? The audience will take a break. You guys can have a couple seconds.
Everyone go roll yourself a joint. We'll be back with our answers soon. Yeah. I think the one that comes to my mind right away is that you got to test it. You always have to test. You can bring your hypothesis, you can bring in what you think looks good or sounds good or reads well, but you're generally wrong. And you got to test it. So sometimes, you know, if you're working with really big traffic volume, then you can run, you know, split tests and get the answer really quickly. And then you can just lean on the data kind of exclusively. But sometimes we don't have that luxury. Most of the time we don't have that luxury. So it's really important to be able to develop even tests that are kind of more like a litmus test. Like, even if you can get 100 users and see where they click or kind of what the result is on the page, then you're going to be smarter if you go with your own gut. And it's really amazing. Like, I've been doing this for 15 years and the ugliest page always wins. So it's like we kind of like create these beautiful websites that we feel like are going to be perfect for the user because we think of ourselves as the user. But I guess like the kind of the understanding underneath this statement I'm making that you have to test it is understanding that you are not the user. But like, once you've been working in digital content for this many years, you have to take your opinion and throw it out because no one acts on the internet like people who, you know, work in the digital space do.
I mean, absolutely. I think I would add to that as well is consistency. I think just the notion of once you are actually producing content, it doesn't matter in what form. It could be, you know, just writing posts on LinkedIn or managing a full-blown content operation. I think really consistency, because once people start interacting and reading your content, I think they develop expectations in regards of What are you going to say next about this topic or that topic, or even, you know, developing this sort of a routine in terms of when are you going to talk about things. So I really think that consistency is really important. I would even go as far as, you know, when we talk a lot about digital marketing and we talk, you know, developing a digital presence, I think all the different technologies involved, whether it's the search engines, the social media platforms, and so on, I think they value consistency a lot as well, because it's not just that the users develop some sort of loyalty and affinity to the content that you're creating and possibly are going to become super fans or loyal to the content that you are actually producing, but it means that you're passionate about what you're doing, you're committed to what you're doing, and you keep going at it. So I think we have a lot of examples that people that do not necessarily produce the most professional content or do not invest the most resources in content production, but they are consistent and they are building audiences and growing, and people are engaging with them, which is, I think, you know, to me, it's definitely one of the most important lessons that I've learned over the past several years.
Yeah, those are good answers. I would say, I mean, no, but I'm asking myself, but I would say like subset under consistency would be like authenticity. I feel like those go really hand in hand. So let me end with this. If you guys have anything to share on the back end of this, happy for you to do so. What if we talk again in, let's say, a couple of years, and things go as smoothly as they've gone in the last couple of years? No, just kidding. What are you guys hoping to bring to the market? Where are you guys hoping to see the Conigma be in a couple of years' time?
Yeah, so millions of users, first of all, that audience that we're growing is super important to us. A whole toolkit of interactive tools that users, I mean web users in this situation, but I guess cannabis users as well, can use to answer their questions and to kind of move on with the next step of their journey. So connections with dispensaries, connections with all of the big cannabis distributors, with healthcare providers, and with other educators, kind of having that all linked in a hub. Many more languages, as we were talking about before, Hebrew, Arabic, French are all on our radar at the moment. I dare say there'll be a couple more that'll come in the next couple of years. And an editorial team which is based all around the world. I mean, we're expanding, but I really love the idea of us having, you know, something of a desk in major locations around the world. Yeah, I think that sums it up for me. Wassim, you want to add anything?
Yeah. I think my best wishes is that we are still, with all the good things that Ilana already said, that we are still unbiased, that we're not being controlled by a group that has obvious commercial interests in the market, and we can still be loyal to our content production process and, you know, commit to the goal of helping consumers make better decisions when it comes to cannabis. And I think it's absolutely achievable. It's not an impossible task. I think right now what we're seeing in the market, there's a lot of different companies that are being either swallowed or kind of disappearing by different interest groups. And I feel like the independent, which is happening obviously all across media and in so many different sectors, right? Not just cannabis. But I really hope that within a few years we become a very large publisher, you know, at least in the top three within the cannabis space, and we are unbiased. I think that's where that would be really good to achieve.
And where can listeners find you? Where can they find the Conigma?
So conigma.com, and also everywhere on social media. Shouldn't be too difficult. And we're actually going to launch the second season of our podcast, the Cannabis Enigma podcast, from there. We're interviewing a number of different leaders across the space, looking into like who's doing it right. That's the theme of this season. So if anyone's going to be there or is interested in being featured on the podcast, you can reach out. LinkedIn's always a good way to find me as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Alana and Wasim, I really, really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on. We'll look for what you guys are putting out there in terms of content, in terms of the podcast, but thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show and makes us feel fantastic. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at Rena Plus, CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA, the plus sign, CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. Thanks so much for listening and see you next time.